Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, 14 Seudot, Chayav Adam Le'echol B'Sukah, Achat Be'yom V'Achat B'Laylo. Rabbi Eliezer says that a person is required to eat 14 meals over the 7 days of Sukkot, one a night, one during the day. Basically, all the meals that a person would have in the normal course of their day, they have to eat in the Sukkah and not in their house anymore. In their days, and until really into the modern era, most people only ate 2 meals a day. That is, that they ate a breakfast meal sometime around the brunch time, and then they eat a meal in the evening. This idea of 3 meals a day is a much more modern phenomenon, but here in the Gemara and throughout most of time, people only ate 2 meals a day. So what Rabbi Eliezer is describing here is that there are 7 days of Sukkot, and the 7 days of Sukkot, a person's required to eat the meals that they would eat in their home, the daily meals, meal in the morning, the meal in the evening, he's got to eat them in the Sukkah, for a total of 14 Seudot over the period of Sukkot, the 7 days of Sukkot. There is no guidelines in terms of how many meals one may eat in the Sukkah or must eat in the Sukkah, with the exception of the first night of Yom Tov, where he is obligated to eat the meal. And we'll learn that in the Gemara as to why on the first night of Sukkot he is obligated to eat in the Sukkah. But other than that, everything is a reshut, as we'll see in the Gemara. The way that Rashi terms it is ein l'dvar kitzvah, im ratza li'itanot, ein anu zukukim lo. He wants to fast on those days, we don't bother him. Elim yochal, but if he wants to eat, then lo yochal chutz l'sukah. He must eat in the sukkah. So the only requirement is that if you do eat, you must eat in the sukkah. But there's no compelling reason to eat. There's no obligation to eat. Rashi terms this in other places, not exactly in these terms. Over here he says you could fast, which is not true. One does not fast on Chol HaMoed. Just like do not fast on Rosh Chodesh. Rashi in other places in Shas makes the point that there's no chiyuv suda. You have no obligation to eat a meal. That's not on Chol HaMoed as well as on Rosh HaChodesh. Only a requirement that you have is that you don't fast, that you do not have a tanit. So however you can create the situation in which you don't have a tanit, then you're fine. As far as your positive or active obligation to eat a suda, that does not exist on those days. And therefore, you don't have to eat in the sukkah. If you want to eat, then you must eat in the sukkah. If you don't want to eat, then you don't have to eat in the sukkah. And that's the position of the Chachamim, except, or with the exception of, the first night of Sukkot, where you are obligated to eat in the sukkah, and you must eat a meal. And this actually has a nafgamina l'halacha, which is the requirement to go back in benching if you forget to say Yaleh V'Yavo. With regards to days in which there's an obligation to have a meal, one would have to repeat the benching if they skipped it. So on Yom Tov, if you forgot to say Yaleh V'Yavo after the meal, then you would have to repeat benching. On the other hand, on a day like Chol HaMoed or on Rosh Chodesh, where there's no obligation for a meal, there you do not have to repeat the benching because there's no obligation in the meal, and therefore if you forget it, it's not the Me'akev. There are some questions with regards to Suda Shlishit on Shabbat, which would depend on how you view the obligation to eat Suda Shlishit on Shabbat, and that's something that we'll discuss a little later in today's shir. Ve'od amar Rabbi Eliezer, Mishlo achal lele yom tov arishon, yeshlim lele yom tov acharon shachag. If you do not eat the meal on the first night of Yom Tov, you can make it up on the last night of Yom Tov, Shmini Atzeret. Obvious problem here is that Shmini Atzeret, you're not eating in the Sukkah anymore. So how is a person doing tashlumim or making up for the fact that they didn't eat their meal on the first night of Yom Tov by Sukkot by eating on Yom HaShmini? Why does that help you out, or how does that help the situation? B'chamim armim, ein ledavar tashlumim. You can't make it up. V'alzeh ne'emar, on this it is said, me'uvat lo yuchol litkon, v'chesron lo yuchal imanot. It is a deviation, a mistake that cannot be fixed. It's a loss that cannot be accounted for, cannot be made up. This pasuk is used by the Gemara in other places. First of all, it's used to describe the creation of a mamzer from an illicit relationship, which is, again, a mistake that can never be corrected. As well as, in the Gemara in Brachot, in Perek Revi'i, it's used to describe someone who misses Kriyat Shema. As opposed to Tfilah, which has Tashlumim, has the ability to make it up, Kriyat Shema has no ability to make it up. If one misses Man Kriyat Shema, then it's a Muvat Lo Yuchol Litkon, V'Chesron Lo Yuchol Imanot. It's something that you cannot make up. So that's what the Chachamim say. If you miss the first night of Yom Tov, you miss the obligation, you miss the mitzvah, you can't make it up on the last day of Yom Tov. The Gemara asks, my time at the Rabbi Eliezer. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer's position that he requires these 14 meals to be in the Sukkah? The answer is, Teshvu Kein Taduru. It's a principle that is going to come up in the Gemara in Sukkah many times. it's a fundamental part of the holiday of Sukkot and living in the Sukkah, which is that you're required to teshvu, to dwell in the Sukkot, gein taduru, the way that you would dwell or live in your home. So you have to use the Sukkah the same way that you would utilize your house. Madira, achat bayom v'achat balaylo, just like in your house, on a normal day, you would have a meal in the morning and a meal at night. Af Sukkah, achat bayom v'achat balaylo, so too in the Sukkah, you have to have a meal in the morning and a meal in the evening. V'rabanan, kedira. But I say, no, it's exactly like your house. When it comes to your house or on your daily activity, there's no obligation to eat. You have a choice. You want to eat, you can eat. You don't want to eat, you don't have to eat. So the same thing with regards to the Sukkah. If you want to eat, you can eat. If you don't want to eat, you don't have to eat. So again, yes, if you eat like you do in your house, then you must eat it in the Sukkah. But just like in your house, if you choose not to eat, then you don't have to eat. So too, you don't have to eat in the Sukkah. You just have to simulate what you would do in your house anyway. And the only way to do that, according to the Chachamim, is to have the same freedom as you have in your home. Just like in your home, you have no obligation to eat. So it's over here, you have no obligation to eat in the Sukkah. Now, if you want to eat, just like if you wanted to eat, you'd eat in your home. So it's over here, if you want to eat, you must eat in the Sukkah. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer sees this as a compelling obligation where you must eat in the Sukkah for those 14 meals, because that's what a normal person would do on a normal day. Is that they have two meals, and since that's the normal conduct of an individual, we obligate that in the Sukkah to have all of those 14 meals there. Mara says, Ihochi, if that's the position of the Chachamim, that it's all optional, then afile lele yom tov rishon nami, then why isn't it true also on the first night of Sukkot? Am Rabbi Yochanan Mishnah Rabbi Shimon ben Yehud Tzadok, Nehmer kan chamish asar, v'nehmer chamish asar b'chag ha-matzot. There is a gzeira shava of chamish asar, the 15th, the first day of Sukkot, to the 15th, which is the first day of Pesach. Pesach is on the 15th of Nisan. Sukkot is on the 15th of Tishrei. The 15th, we have a Gezeirah Shavah, and from that Gezeirah Shavah we learn, Mala Halan Laila Rishon Chuvah, just like by Pesach, the consumption of Matzah on the first night is an obligation, even though the remainder of Pesach it is a Rishut, on the first night you must eat the Matzah. Mikam Ve'elech Rishut, from after the first night, it's optional. So to over here, Afkan, so to by Sukkah, Laila Rishon Chuva, Mikam Elech Rishut. The first day is an obligation, and from there on is a Rishut. Tosafot points out from the Yushalmi that this might also have implications in terms of the obligation to eat in the Sukkah, that you require a Kezayit the same way that you require a Kezayit of Matzah, as well as the need to eat the Matzah B'Teavon. On the night of Pesach, maybe you have to enter the Sukkah with that same Teavon, that same appetite for the excitement to eat in the Sukkah. And the Gemara says, "V'hata minalan." How do you know that's true there? So Amakra, the pasuk says, "Be'eruv tochlu matzot." Again, we spoke about this in Psachim Kufchof that it is not the pashtut of pasuk. They're clearly taking the pasuk out of context and reading it out of context in order to get to this result. But the result is, "Be'eruv tochlu matzot." Hakatuv kavo chova. You're obligated to eat matzah on the first night of Pesach, whereas the remainder of Pesach it's a reshut and seutu by Sukkot. The first night you're obligated to eat in the Sukkah. Everything after that is Rishut. And as I mentioned back on Kuf Chof, you can listen in Psachim to hear the more details of this. But I heard from Rav Samet, and I think this is a tremendous explanation of this idea. Why is it an obligation to eat on the first night in the Sukkah? Why is it an obligation to have Matzah on the first night? It's because of that dynamic change. The change in Pesach is that the cornerstone of your meal changes from bread to Matzah. Whereas by Sukkot, the change is the fact that you don't live in your house, you don't dwell in your house, you dwell in Sukkah. So as far as delineating the start, you must have an obligation to do that, otherwise how do we know that it started? You only know that it started because you do something different than you normally do. So if we obligate you to eat a meal on the first day and you eat in the Sukkah, we know we've begun the period of living in the Sukkah. Same thing by Matzah. How do we know we've switched from bread to Matzah? Only if we obligate you to eat Matzah on the first night, then we know you've started the period of Matzah. After that, it's irrelevant. After that, the choice is, if you want to eat a meal, you have to eat matzah. You want to eat a meal, you have to eat in the Sukkah. So that is optional, because you've already delineated the beginning of that period. And the same is true in the closing part of the period, and that is why on Shmini Atzeret, one may not eat in the Sukkah. One must eat in the house, because that's the end point. That's the delineating point of ending the living in the Sukkah, and moving into the house, and living in the house. And so too, we've discussed this with regards to matzah and chametz, that the delineation of the end of the period of eating matzah is with the eating of chametz. And that's why the minhag of people like the Gra was to eat immediately on Motze Pesach chametz, in order to show that we have changed over from the time of matzah to time of chametz. And that is why here, again, the obligation on the first night to eat in the Sukkah, And after that, it's a reshut. Reshut, not in the traditional sense of reshut, that if you want to, you can. If you don't want to, you don't. No, it's if you're going to eat, then you must do it in the sukkah. If you're going to live like you live in your house, you're going to instead live in the sukkah. So anything that you would do in your house, you're going to do in the sukkah. Just like in your house, if you skip the meal, it's no big deal. So too in the sukkah, if you skip the meal, then it's no big deal because you don't have an obligation to eat a meal. You have an obligation to be in the sukkah for anything you would have done in your house. Va'od amar Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says here, Bahama Rabbi Eliezer, arbaser suyodot adam chayav adam lecho besukkah, chat bayom v'chat ba'layla. Doesn't a person have to eat these 14 meals in this sukkah? And over here, he's saying that you can make it up for it on Shemini Atzeret, where there is no sukkah. It happens to be that Yerushalmi learns it out slightly differently than we do. We learn it out here in the Gemara Bavli from Teshvu, Gein Taduru. On the other hand, Yerushalmi learns out the 14 meals from the fact that it says Teshvu here by Sukkot, and also by the Miluim. It says there that they have to, Petach Omei Teshvu Yomam V'Layla Shivat Yomim. They have to be there day and night for 7 days by the front of the Chatzer Omoed, the Petach Omoed. So the Gemara there learns a Gzera Sheva of Teshvu, Teshvu, to teach you that that's the obligation by Sukkot, that Yom Valayla, that you be there. Just like in the Miluim, they ate the Korbanot, and they lived there, so too in the Sukkah. And that's how Rabbi Eliezer learns his obligation. But in either instance, whatever the source of the obligation is to eat in the Sukkah for those 14 meals. And now Rabbi Eliezer, at the end of our Mishnah, introduced the possibility that you can make up for the lacking in the first day, eating on Shemini Atzeret. But by Shemini Atzeret, you're clearly not eating in the Sukkah. As Rashi reminds us that if you do eat in the Sukkah on Shemini Atzeret, it's actually a violation of a din d'oraita of Baal Tosif. So certainly nobody's eating in the Sukkah on Shemini Atzeret in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously in Chutz Laretz, we'll see later on in the Masechta what we do with that. But there's a problem with eating the Sukkah, so you're clearly going to be eating in the house. So how is it that it makes up for the lack of eating the meal on the first night of Sukkot? That's what the Gemara says. Rabbi Lezer retracted his position. He agreed with the Chachamim. Rashi claims that the agreement with the Chachamim was that you no longer have to have an obligation to eat in the Sukkah. This idea of eating 14 meals in the Sukkah, Rabbi Lezer backed down from that, and he believes that, just like the Chachamim, it's all a reshut. Now, the only thing he did leave is, just like the Chachamim believed that the first night is a chovah, so he believes the first night is a chovah, but he says you can make up for that chovah by eating on Shemini Atzeret. He says, l'chatchilo, of course, you should eat it on the first night, but b'diavad, if you didn't do that, you'll be allowed to make it up on the night of Shemini Atzeret. Again, which would be interesting, because we just explained that those two meals are both very special. The meal of the first night of Sukkot, because it delineates the beginning of eating or dwelling in the sukkah, and the first meal on Shemini Atzeret, the night of Shemini Atzeret, is a meal that delineates eating in the home and not in the sukkah, leaving the sukkah. So it's interesting that Rabbi Eliezer sees them as exchangeable in that way, that he says the night meal of Shemini Atzeret can make up for that meal that you missed on the first night of Yom Tov, because in a real sense, they are functioning in the same way. They're both delineating the beginning of Sukkot and the end of Sukkot. And that might be what's part of what's driving Rabbi Lezer's opinion in this case. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi, and he says that's not what it sounds like from Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer sounds like Mashlim means that he's making up for something that he missed, but that the obligation is still there. And there Tosafot says that the only thing that changed in Rabbi Lezer's opinion is not that you have to eat 14 meals, but that you have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. Because in the Mishnah he said, Rabbi Lezer, Arba'asre sudot chayav adam lecho bisukkah. You have to eat them in the sukkah. What he retracted, or what he changed about his position, is that you have to eat 14 meals, they don't have to be in the sukkah. And then you can understand this idea of tashlumim. How could he make up for the first night's meal by eating the night of Shemini Atzeret? That's because Shemini Atzeret is also a meal. So if as long as you're not obligated to be in the sukkah, Shemini Atzeret can make up for the other meals from the Yom Tov. As Rashi points out, just like by the korbanot of Simcha and the korbanot Ri'iyah that a person has to bring on the regel, just like we say there, that if you don't bring them on the first day, you have Tashlumim, Kol HaChag, and Yom Tov Acharon. Shemini Atzeret can function as a Tashlumim. So too over here, Shemini Atzeret will function as a Tashlumim for the first day. And that is the premise of Rabbi Lezer's opinion. According to Rashi, it's only because he has the obligation on the first night, and he's trying to make that up on Shemini Atzeret. According to Tosafot, it remains that there's an obligation of 14 meals. They just don't have to be 14 meals in the Sukkah. And therefore, Shemini Atzeret can make up for that meal that he missed on the first night of Sukkot. Mashlim b'mai. Now, the Gemara asks a question on Rabbi Lezer's opinion. If he comes to make up for missing that meal on the first night of Sukkot, how does he make up for that on Shemini Atzeret? Ilema berifto. If he's making it up with bread, and he's expanding the meal that he's eating, suda de yomei ka'achil. They can't show anything by that because Shmini Atzeret has its own obligation. It is a Yom Tov, and therefore there's a requirement to eat at night and during the day. Just because either you made a meal on that day or you even expanded the meal that you ate, neither of those are definitive or delineated separately to make it a makeup for the first day of Yom Tov. Elamai Yashlim. What does it mean that he has to make it up? Yashlim b'minei targima. That he can make it up with additional items that he eats. Now this minei targima, Rashi claims that minei targima are kamon peirot, v'kisnin, v'kaflutot, v'mfushalot. Talks about it being fruits and nuts and possibly patababi kisnin, other mizonotite items that Rashi mentions over here that can be the minei targima. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi here, as well as where we saw this in the Gemara in Yoma. He says minei targima are not fruits for sure, and he leans heavily to say that they are mizonot, and that they have to be mizonot. Rashi over here actually translates later on targima as what seems to be prune juice. Prunes or prune juice, but he also mentions in other places these sweet fruits. And so that would be a sweet dried fruit that one might consider to be minei targima. The reason Tosafot pushes against that is, you can look in the Tosafot to see that, but it does have a nafkamina, which Tosafot does mention over here as not working, which is that, can you use this for sudash lishit? Is an obligation to wash and have bread at sudash lishit? So according to Tosafot, who mentions it here, and many of the Rishonim, the answer is yes. Just like you have to have lechem and a suda for the first two meals, so too with suda shlishit on Shabbat, you have to have lechem. Some of them believe that you have to have lechem mishneh, just like you have the other meals. There are others that say no, that you only need a single lechem. And that is explained by the issue of the man and the double portion. And that by the time you got to suda shlishit, you actually didn't have any more bread. You were down to the single loaf of bread. And because of that, you don't need lechem mishneh at suda shlishit. Well, either way, you would still end up washing and being koveya suda la lechem. There are others who believe that you can use minei targima to make up for sudash lishit. And that will depend on what you think minei targima is. Tosafot leans heavily to say that their dinei mizonot. Rashi over here indicates they're also fruit. And those are the three deot that are brought down in the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah with regards to sudash lishit. That the best way for one to do sudash lishit is to have lechem. And to have lechem mishneh, but definitely have lechem. And to wash. The next best is, if you can't do that, to have mizonot. The next best after that is, if you can't do that, then yesh omrim, that the people that say they can use fruits. You can use mini targima to make sudash lishit. And again, in a hierarchy, if you had to choose, of course we would pick washing and bread. But all the other alternatives are there as subpar performances of sudash lishit, but there are opinions who say that it works. So if you're in a bind, and you can't wash, or you have nothing to wash on, then one can use mizonot. And again, if you don't have mizonot, you should at least eat fruit. Because the way Rashi translates minei targima over here as fruit. So it does have a nafkamina as to what minei targima are. But what the Gemara suggests over here is that a person adds on an additional, he has his two meals of Shmini Atzeret. In addition to that, he adds on minei targima. He has another seating in which he eats these additional items that will be the makeup for this suda for Yom Tov Rishon. Now, Rashi mentions over here that it's a kol shekein, that if he washed and he made a third suda, that definitely would be the makeup. But here they're giving him the option of making up the meal with minei targima. And that's where Tosafot says, don't extrapolate that to sudash lishit and think, ah, here you made up for a meal that you're supposed to wash with minei targima, so too by sudash lishit you can do the same thing. For the first two meals you need lechem mishneh, so it's not going to work. By sudash lishit, where maybe there's no requirement of lechem mishneh, then maybe you could do this. And Tosafot says, don't do that, because I have a limo that says you have to wash and you have to have a full suda by sudash lishit. But according to others who think that that is the case, that's what brings us to these alternative opinions. That minei targima can fill in for that meal of suda shlishit. Rashi says you could use these minei targima, or you could actually wash and make a third meal, and that will help you to make up for what you missed in Yom Tov Rishon. Tanya Nami Ochi, you have a braita that supports that understanding. Im hishlim im minei targima, yatsa. If he filled it in with minei targima, then he's yotze. Meaning minei targima are sufficient to be the makeup meal for the Yom Tov HaRishon. Shala petropus shel agripas amelech. So the executor of the estate of Agrippa Zamelech asked Rabbi Eliezer, "Kagon ani sheni regil echol el suda achat bayom. I normally only eat one meal during the day. I'm so busy, I have so much to do that I only have time for one meal. So I only eat one meal during the day. Maush echol suda achat vipater. Well, can I do the same thing with suga? If you are reasoning Rabbi Eliezer's premise on this idea that people eat two meals a day, therefore you have to eat two meals in the suga. I, who don't eat two meals a day, only eat one meal a day. Maybe I should only have to eat one meal a day in the sukkah." Wait, when you eat one meal during every regular day, you eat one meal plus your parparot. Parparot are like appetizers or other additional items that you eat during the day. So yes, you snack and you have a whole meal. So if that's the case, then you should have to replicate that in Sukkah. Over here, you're not going to add anything else for the kavod of your creator. Meaning, he's saying that how could it be that your daily life will include all these extra bonuses? You'll eat the one meal, but then you eat all these other items on the side. How can you say in Sukkah, I'll eat my one meal in Sukkah, I'm done? No, you have to do the same thing you do during the week. All those additional little parparot, these appetizers, additional items that you eat, just like you eat them during the week, you got to eat them in the Sukkah. In addition that he mentioned, I have two wives. They're in places that are close by, but they're not in the same city. So I can't stay in the same house. I move. I move between my houses. Sometimes I'm in Tveria, sometimes I'm in Tzipori, because it depends which wife that I'm by. And therefore I have two Sukkot. I have one in Tzipori, one in Tveria. Mahush etzei mitzukah lesukah. Am I allowed to stay one night in the Sukkah with one of my wives and then move another night to another Sukkah with my other wife? Bepater, and I'll be fine. Marlo, lo. He says, nope, you can't do that. Shani omeriko, yotzei mitzukah lesukah, batel mitzvatah shel rishonah. If you switch Sukkot during the middle of Sukkah, you're not yotzei in the mitzvah of Sukkah. And this is premised on Rabbi Lezer's opinion, which we saw before. Tanya, Rabbi Lezer omer, ein, yotzei mitzukah lesukah. You're not allowed to move from one Sukkah to another Sukkah. Meaning that you have to eat, sleep, and live in one Sukkah for the entire Sukkot. Because you can't make a Sukkah in Cholom Shomayit. And why is that? The Gemara will come back to in a second, but this is Rabbi Lezer l'shitoto, that the only Sukkah that works is a Sukkah l'shiv'ah. It has to be Sukkah for 7 days. A Sukkah that's ru'uyah for 7 days, but also Sukkah that you are in for the 7 days. You have to use the Sukkah for those 7 days, just like you would live in your house for the entire time. Since you would live in your house for the entire period, so to over here, you have to live in a single Sukkah for the entire 7 days, and we'll see the limud that Rabbi Lezer has from that. On the other hand, the Chamim Armim Yotzim is Sukkah the Sukkah. You can move from one Sukkah, you can sleep in one Sukkah tonight, another Sukkah the next night, eat in one today, eat in a different one tomorrow. In addition, Vosim Sukkah v'chol shel moed, you're allowed to put up a Sukkah. If you didn't have a Sukkah for the beginning of Sukkot, you can put on up on chol moed. It's a good Sukkah. V'shavim. Everybody agrees. Shim nafla shechozer bonek v'chol shel moed. If you had a Sukkah that collapsed or fell down, that he can erect it, he can put it back together on Cholosh HaMoed and have the Sukkah from there forward. My time at the Rebbe Lezer. What is the premise of Rebbe Lezer's opinion? Amakra, Chag HaSukkot Taseh Lecha Shivat Yamim. Aseh Sukkah Ruya L'Shiva. You have to make a Sukkah that is good enough for 7 days. Now, it's not simply that the Sukkah has to be good enough for 7 days. That is a requirement, that the Sukkah be there for the entire 7 days and usable for the 7 days. But he also reads it much more literally, that you must be in that Sukkah, that particular Sukkah that you built, you have to be there for all 7 days. Rabbanan, hachigam arachman. This is what the pasuk means. Aseh sukkah b'chag. That you have to make a sukkah on the chag. That for 7 days you have an obligation to build a sukkah. If you don't have a sukkah, you gotta put a sukkah together. As long as the chag of Sukkot exists, one has to put up a sukkah and sit in a sukkah. Now, v'shavim. They both agree. Dim nafla shechozer bone uta b'cholosh moed. So Gemara says, pshita. What else is gonna do? He has to have a sukkah. So Gemara says, no ma'udu teima hai achurita yi. This is a different sukkah. If this one collapsed and you build a new one, it's almost like panim kadosh showed bodekan reina l'shiva, and therefore it's not a sukkah that was there for all 7 days. And for Rabbi Lezer, that won't work. Kamash Malan, that's not the case. Since the sukkah collapsed and you erected it, it's basically a continuation or a tashlumim to the rishon. Tosfot says there was a girsa in some gemarot that said, Kevin de bidi da ka'avit ihi mashma ishbonota botan itzim. Kamash Malon and those Gemara seem to indicate that he used the same materials from the original Sukkah to erect the second Sukkah, and because of that, it's considered to be a continuation. So that would be a much more narrow definition, according to Rabbi Lezer, of what's considered to be a continuation of the first Sukkah. It would have to be a Sukkah that utilized the materials from the first Sukkah. On the other hand, the way our Gemaras read, it's simply that since he had to replace that Sukkah, it becomes the continuation of that first Sukkah. Tanya, Rabbi Lezer, Omer, Kashem, Shein Adam Yotzeh, Dechovato, B'yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag, B'luvo Shel Chavero. Just like we know, which we're going to see coming up in later in the Masechta, that it says, V'akachtam lachem b'yom harishon. Lachem means you must own it. So just like when it comes to the first day of Yom Tov, you must own your lulav. You can't use someone else's lulav. You can't borrow a lulav. You can't steal a lulav. None of those will work in terms of being yotzei the mitzvah of lulav. Dichtiv, V'akachtam lachem b'yom harishon. Pri'etzadar kapot marim. Mishalachem. It must be yours. So kach, ein adam deyotzei yedei chovato b'sukato shel chavero. So too, when it comes to Sukkah, you can't use your friend's Sukkah, dichtiv. Chag HaSukkot, tase lecha, shivat yamim, mishalcha. Has to be yours. We agree with you. We know that the halacha is, with regards to lulav, you must own your lulav on the first day of Yom Tov. You can't borrow it. You can't steal it. It doesn't work. It must be your lulav. That we agree with. But despite the fact that that's true, but when it comes to sukkah, aval yotzei adam yedei chvato b'sukkato shel chaveiro, a person can be yotzei in the midst of sukkah and someone else's sukkah. If you're invited out for the first night of Sukkot, you're invited out for any day of Sukkot, you can go eat in someone else's sukkah, and that's fine. You don't have to own the sukkah in order to be yotzei. Tosafot does raise a very interesting issue, and he says, according to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, well, you have a household full of people, and there's a requirement that everybody own the sukkah. So what are you going to have? Everybody's going to have their own private sukkah, because everybody has to own the sukkah. Tosafot seems that as being implausible. That's a crazy situation in which every family, everybody's going to have their own sukkah. So Tosafot in the end says, maybe you have to say, Teshuvah kein taduru. You live in the sukkah the same way you would live in the house. So yes, you have to own the house, but just like you live in a house that your father owns, so too, you can sit in the sukkah that your father owns. So the way that you live at home, that is the way they live in the sukkah. And therefore, maybe there's a more expansive view of ownership here, that's similar to what is in a home. So too, you would say the same thing by a sukkah. And how do the Chachamim know that that's the case? Because it says, Dichtiv kol ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu b'sukkot. Hamej kol Yisrael ruim leshiv sukkah achad. It says, every ezrach b'Yisrael will sit in the sukkot. Hamej kol Yisrael ruim leshiv sukkah achad. Where it says, based on this, it says, kol ezrach b'Yisrael bas yeshvu b'sukkot. Sounds like they can all sit in a single sukkah. So Rashi says, okay, what does that mean that they all have to sit in a single sukkah? How do you know that it doesn't have to be yours? He says, because we can never have a situation in which every person can give in a pruta and own enough of this sukkah, that if a pruta is worth of ownership in this sukkah. The idea being that it's a single sukkah, anybody can use it, but not everybody's going to have ownership in it. Well, if not everybody has ownership in it, it means the people are being yotzei with a sukkah that's not theirs. That's how Rashi says the limud works. Tosafot at first says that Vachinam Dachak, the Rashi pushed the Perush that way, it wasn't necessary, because it says Lecha. It says in the Pasuk, Lecha, which is the Me'utei Shutafim, which says you can't be joint owners, you can't be partners in a Sukkah. So if the Torah tells you that Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael, every person in Israel could sit into a single Sukkah, there's no way that you can be partners. If you can't be partners, it must be that you're using someone else's Sukkah. So that's how Tosafot explains it, but then he has difficulty with his interpretation or explaining where the Gemara says you can't have partners and when you can't have partners. Because the Gemara is not consistent, it's limudim from the words lachem and lecha. So in the end, Tosafot comes back and says that Rashi's Perush doesn't have all of these problems, and therefore, maybe Rashi's Perush is a better understanding here of why we know that it's not shutafim here, because we just can't have it, that everybody would have an ownership piece in here, it's just not big enough, or not worth enough money that everybody can have that type of ownership, and that means that people are being yotze with a sukkah that's not theirs. But they learned that out from Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael Yeshu B'Sukkot. Similarly, Mud is by Korban HaPesach. That's actually where we learned Shlichut from. There it sounds like everybody can be Yotze with one Korban HaPesach. And Kol Yisrael can be Yotze with one Korban HaPesach. So to over here, all Kol Yisrael can be Yotze with one Sukkah. And that has implications in terms of the ability to be Yotze in a Sukkah that does not belong to you. Rabbanan Ha'ilecha Mai Darshi Bei. Look, the word Lecha does appear in the Pasuk. What are they going to do with that? Mibayle the mutek zulat comes to exclude a stolen sukkah. Ava shula k'tiv kol ezrach. And that's the balance here. It says kol ezrach b'Yisrael sounds like you don't have to own the sukkah, and lecha sounds like you do have to own the sukkah. So how do I reconcile between the pasuk of v'chag ha'sukkot aseh lecha shivat yamim versus kol ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu b'sukkot? I'll say that one of them is exclusionary. Lecha comes to exclude gizula. Case of stolen, you may not sit in a sukkah that's stolen. On the other hand, she'ula, borrowed sukkah, or a sukkah where you have permission granted to be in there, that'll be fine from the pasuk of Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael. Now obviously, how did the Gemara know which go which way? It seems obvious, the logical way would be to exclude gezula and include she'ula. That makes the most sense. Doing it the opposite way around would seem completely illogical to make a drush in that direction. Rabbi Lezer, hi Kol Ezrach Mayavidle. What does Rabbi Lezer do with the pasuk of Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael? We use it for a ger who became a convert in the middle of Sukkot, or a katan who became a gadol. He had straight sarot in the middle of Sukkot. So then, what's the din? Over there, Rabbi Lezer needs you to have a sukkah for all 7 days. So this, Kol Ezrach B'Yisrael, is a dispensation for those individuals who were not obligated before. If their obligation only starts in the middle of Sukkot, then they only have to put up a sukkah in the middle of Sukkot, and it's a kosher sukkah. So he has a special dispensation for those people who only become obligated in the middle of Sukkot, that they can build their sukkah in the middle of Sukkot. V'chachamim, what about the Rabbonon? Kaven Shamru Osim Sugah B'Chol Shemoyed Lo Yitzrich Ra. They don't need a pasuk for that, because they believe even a regular individual can build a sugah in the middle of Chol HaMoed. So too, this person became obligated in the middle of sugah, he'll put up a sugah, and he'll be yotze in the midst of sugah from there forward. So they don't need a drasha, because they have no restriction. Rabbi Lezer has a restriction, which says that you can only be in a sugah that was there for all 7 days, and ruyah for 7 days. Then he has a problem here. So then he has to, in these special cases, have a dispensation to allow him to build a sugah midway through sugah. The Chachamim will believe you can always do that. They don't need a dispensation here because they don't have the problem to start with. So that's the end of that machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. And now we're going to have some more incidents with Rabbi Eliezer, something similar to what we saw previously in the Gemara in Yoma, which is Tan Rabbanan. Masib Rabbi Eloi Shalach Lakbil Pnei Rabbi Eliezer Rabbo Bilot. Rabbi Eloi, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer, went to pay a visit to Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe in Lot, Beregel. But it was on Yom Tov. Amaloi Eloi, incha mishovtei haregel. You're not one of those that keeps Yom Tov. You don't keep a proper tenor to the day of Yom Tov that he came to visit me. Now it's clear that he traveled to him beforehand. He lived far away, Rabbi Eloi, and he traveled to him before Yom Tov, and then he spent Yom Tov by his Rebbe. Shaya Rabbi Lez Omer, Mishabeach Ani at Atzlanim, Shein Yotzim Yibateim Beregel. I give praise to those lazy people who never leave their house, even though they never leave their house all year round because they're just too lazy. But when they do that on the regel, they end up getting to the right ends. How do they get to the right ends? Because a person should not leave their house on the regel. Because the pasuk says, "V'samachta ata uveitecha," that you have to be happy ata uveitecha with your household and uveitecha beito zo ishto. And that there's a requirement for a family unit to be intact and for a husband and wife to be together for Yom Tov. So if you leave your wife behind and come visit me, then you're not mimikai in the mitzvah. V'samachta ata uveitecha. So you're not one of the shoftei regel. You don't keep the right spirit of Yom Tov of spending that time with your wife, and you're here with me. The Gemara says, "V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, when I ain't shechayav adam lakbil pnei rabo beregel." Wait a minute, don't we have this memra from Rabbi Yitzchak that a person's obligated to go visit his rebbe on the regel? Shenemar, how do we know this? We know this from the Isha Shunamit, who says to her husband after her son passes away, she wants to go to Elisha. Madua at olechet elav hayom. Her husband asks her, "Why are you going there today? Lo chodesh velo shabbat." It's not Rosh Chodesh, it's not Shabbat, why are you going to visit him? Michlau, we can infer from his statement that she did pay visit to Elisha on those specific days, whether it was Rosh Chodesh or Shabbat. Shabbat is controversial over here, we'll discuss that in 1 second, but it's clear here from the Isha Shunamit that her husband was accustomed to seeing her go visit Elisha on these days. So that means that a person must have an obligation to go visit his Rebbe on those days. And so how can it be here? Rabbi Lezer is criticizing Rabbi Eloi for coming to visit him on the regel. Where it says, no problem. It depends how close he lives to his Rebbe. If he lives in proximity where he can go there on the day and come back and spend the night with his wife and be together with his family for Yom Tov, that's fine. But on the other hand, if he has to go there and stay by his Rebbe, that's problematic and that doesn't work because it's Samachta Tov Veitech. You have to be together with your wife for Yom Tov. Now, as far as the limit of the Gemara here, which brings it from the Isha Shunamit, which mentions Chodesh and Shabbat, a lot of Rishonim and Achronim take up this issue, including the Ritva, who ask about how could it be? Why is Shabbat a determining fact over here? They give all sorts of answers. That depends how close you live to your Rebbe. Maybe Shabbat is in the picture. The best answer, the Gra mentions this, and the best answer is that Shabbat here does not mean Shabbat in the 7 days a week. Shabbat here means Yom Tov. The same way in the Torah, which Sfartan Lechem Imachad Shabbat does not mean from Shabbat, but means from the day after Pesach, that Yom Tov is also called a Shabbat. So to over here, Yom Tov is called Shabbat. And the biggest evidence to the fact of that in the Pasuk is, usually Pesukim are laid out in hierarchy, which is the thing that happens most frequently you would mention first, and then afterwards you mention the item that's less frequent. So if that was the case in the Pasuk, it said, Lo Shabbat Velo Chodesh. It's not Shabbat, it's not Chodesh. So over here, why is it reversed and it says Lo Chodesh Velo Shabbat? That's the answer, is because Shabbat here is not the Shabbat Brishit, but rather it's Shabbat of Yom Tov. And therefore Rosh Chodesh is more frequent. So as we say, it's Lo Chodesh Velo Shabbat. It's not Yom Tov. Why are you going to visit Elisha? There's an interesting tshuva from Noda Yehuda about this. Obligation based on the Noda Yehuda to visit one's Rebbe might be correlated with the Migdash, meaning visiting the Hashem and the Shekhinah on the regel. It might be correlated, and if that's the case, the halach would not apply today because there is no mikdash. And truthfully, the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch do not bring this down the halacha. Whereas the Rambam does bring it down the halacha, although he brings it in Hilchot Talmud Torah. Question if the Rambam believes that because the Rambam brings down halachot that are even applicable to Atid Lavo, But the Rambam believes that the obligation still stands even despite the Churban HaBayit. Nevertheless, there is a minhag to go visit one's Rebbe on Nazir and Yom Tov, but during Chol HaMoed, or around the Regel, based on this memra of Rabbi Yitzchak. Tan Rabbanan, Masi b'Rabbi Eliezer, Sheshavat b'Galil Elyon b'Sukkato shel Yochanan b'Rabbi Eloi. So there was this incident in which Rabbi Eliezer ended up being in the Galil Elyon in a Sukkah of Yochanan b'Rabbi Eloi. It's interesting, I don't know if this is the father of Rabbi Eloi, who was his student or his Talmud, because if it's Yochanan b'Rabbi Eloi, that would mean it was the son of his student. It's more likely that this Rabbi Eli is the grandfather of the Rabbi Eli mentioned in the previous story, and it's very possible that he knew his father, Rabbi Eliezer knew his father, and that Yochanan ben Rabbi Eli had sent his son to learn by Rabbi Eliezer, b'Kesari, v'amila b'Kesarion. Some people say it was in Kesari, some people say it was in Kesarion. V'giach hama l'sukah, and the sons moved over to the sukah, amalo, ma'u shefros alei asadin, can I put a sheet on top to block the sun? Amalo, en lecha ko shevet v'shevet mitzrayel shelo emid m'menu shofet. There is no Shevet tribe within Klal Yisrael that did not have a Shofet that came from them. Rashi over here goes through the list of the Shoftim. This is starting from Yeshua ben Nun until the time of Shmuel when he anoints Shaul to be the king from Binyamin. He goes through all the Shvatim where we know we do have a Shofet that was from that Shevet. In the end he says, I have a problem because there are a list of Shoftim who don't have a Shevet and I have a bunch of Shvatim which I don't have matched up with the Shofet. He says, I don't know what to do, but it's clear here that the Gemara thinks, or Rabbi Eliezer thinks, that they are correlated. Jezer Otniel ben Kenaz, Yitach Agiladiv, Shamgar ben Anat, Beir Vavdon, Lo Yadati, Shemot Shivtehem. Navi never tells us what Shevet they're from. Umarivain, Shimon Gad Asher, Lo Matzati Mifrash. And from those Shvatim, we don't find any individuals that are designated to be from that Shevet. So, based on that, Rashi is assuming that the final Shvatim, where we don't have a clear understanding of where they had a shofet from, and the shoftim that don't have a shevet associated with them, there must be a connection between those two, and therefore you get to every shevet having a shofet from that shevet. So he giach amal chatzia sukkah, the sun continued to move over, and now was halfway to the sukkah. Amar lo, ma'us yefros leha sadin, he asked him again, can I put a sheet on top to block the sun for you? Amar lo, ein lecha ko shevet shevet misrael shelo yatzu mimenu nevi'im. Every Shevet in Klal Yisrael had a Navi that came from it. Shevet Yehuda ben Yamin emidu milachim al pi nevi'im. And Yehuda ben Yamin had an additional thing, which was that kings were chosen from them by nevi'im. As Rashi points out here, that Shmuel anointed both David and Shaul. The son reached the feet of Rabbi Eliezer, Natal Yochanan Sadin upreis alea. So then he went ahead and put the sheet on. He couldn't ask him anymore. The son was there already. Put the sheet on top of the sukkah. Hifshil Rabbi Eliezer talitol achurav. Rabbi Eliezer pushed his talit behind him. He wrapped himself in his talit. Vayatza. He walked out. He left the sukkah. Now he left the sukkah. It sounds like here that he wasn't happy with what had just happened. But the truth is, Rashi mentions he left the sukkah because he didn't want people to think that he was condoning this behavior when he wasn't necessarily paskin alocha this way. And why is that he's not passing the loch over here? Lo mipnei shifligo b'dvarim. It's not because he was trying to push him away. It wasn't like Yochanan was asking him questions and he didn't know the answer, or he was just playing with him, but rather, mipnei shalomar davar shalom shama mipi rabbo leolam. He never had said such a thing. We know this about Rabbi Eliezer. He never said anything over that he didn't hear from his Rebbe. And with regards to this halacha, he didn't have a mesora, and therefore he was unwilling to answer the question with regards to halacha, even though he might have known the answer, even though he might have had an inkling about what the answer was, he didn't answer it because he hadn't heard from his Rebbe. He was very machbin only to say over things that he heard from his Rebbe. So, hechi avidochi. So now the Gemara goes back and says, wait a minute. Rabbi Eliezer the Shitato is in big trouble here. Rabbi Eliezer over here is, first of all, away from home. He's hanging out with Yochanan ben Rabbi Eli somewhere besides his home. We know his home is in Lod. And he's in either Kesari or Kesarion. Number two is, how does he have a sukkah shiva? He was says you have to stay in the same sukkah for the whole sukkah. Over here, he was up in Kesari or Kesarion, and now he's going to go back home to Lod. He's not in a sukkah shiva. So how is that possible? This is not Rabbi Eliezer the Shitato. V'amar Rabbi Eliezer yotzim sukkah the sukkah. When it says regel acher havai, that was a different regel. They hear the two stories, one story where he was in Lod, and one story where he was up in Kesari or Kesarion. That happened on two different regalim. It wasn't the same regal that he was traveling back and forth, so therefore he stayed in the same sukkah for the entirety of that duration. So it's not a problem of sukkah shiva. V'amar Rabbi Eliezer mishabech ani et atzlanim she'en yotzim b'bateim b'regel. So he said, wait a minute, what about this idea that you're not supposed to leave your home? And he says, I praise those lazy people who never leave their homes, because on the regal they actually turn out to be doing the right thing, because they're staying home with their wives. where it says, Shabbat Havai. It wasn't actually a regel, but rather was Shabbat. And the question was, the same question that you would have on Yom Tov, as you have in Shabbat, is this considered to be Mosif al Ol Arai? Is this adding on to an Ohel? Is there a problem with adding on to an Ohel on Shabbat by pulling the sheet across? Since it wasn't on the regel, there was no obligation for him to be home with his wife. It's a machtat avaytech, it's an obligation on Yom Tov, not an obligation on Shabbat. So yes, it was a regel, but not the regel in the sense of a regel Yom Tov, but a regel in the sense of it was a Shabbat. That's what it means, Shishabbat. He stayed there. He stayed up there, not on a Yom Tov, but on a Shabbat. And Sukkato happens to be a coincidence. They were out in a Sukkah. It wasn't because it was the Yom Tov of Sukkot. They were sitting out in a Sukkah because it was nice climate. It was comfortable to be in the Sukkah. And they had this question with regards to Hilchot Shabbat, which also would be true by Hilchot Yom Tov as well. Gemara says, wait a minute. Rabbi Elazar did speak about this topic at the end of the Gemara Shabbat, the final Mishnah in the Gemara Shabbat. She talks about kachach alone. Rabbi Elazar Omer b'zvan shekashur v'taloi pokugimbo. When you have the window shades that you put in over the shutters that you put into the window, in their day the windows didn't have glass, they were open holes. So when you wanted to close it, you had to put in a shutter into that hole. The question is, does that look like you're being mosif ala binyan? Does that look like you're doing some sort of building on Shabbat or Yom Tov? Or is that simply mosif ala orai, which isn't a problem? So Rabbi Elazar says the only time you can do it is b'zvan shekashur, when the shutter or the shade is tied to the building, and talui, it's off the ground. It has to be off the ground, suspended in the air, and tied. Those two things then permit you to close up the hole, because then it's clear that it's not a binyan, and you're not putting it in there permanently. But if you're missing either one of those, it doesn't work. On the other hand, achamim omrim ben kach or ben kach pokekim, you can do it either way. Doesn't matter. It's clearly that's temporary. Either if it's talui or kashur, either one of them is sufficient to allow you to push it in and to close it up. Mar says, no. Hotam to do mevatel. Over there, the problem is that he's mevatel it. It's a piece of wood. It's a shutter that can remain there for a long period of time. It's very likely that a person would leave it there. If that's the case, then it really is like binyan, because he doesn't pop it in and out. He's going to leave it there for a long duration. So over there, we say that it's a problem of mosif ol arai. But over here, haha, lo mevatel, lo. But over here, where he's putting a sheet on top, he's clearly not going to leave the sheet there. He just put it there temporarily to block the sun. But it's clear he's going to take the sheet away afterwards. So over here, maybe the halacha would be different. Maybe it would not be considered mosif ol arai over here. It wouldn't be a problem on Shabbat Yom Tov. So that's why I have a hochad lamavatolo. That's why he didn't extrapolate the halacha that he had in Shabbat from Bakaka Chalon to over here, because he thought the cases might be different. If the case is different, then he doesn't have a mesorah about this case. He has a mesorah about that case, but not this case. And therefore, he was unwilling to pass an halacha because he hadn't heard anything about this from his Rebbe. Okay, we'll stop over here.